I felt it very much in my heart today to really give some sense of the different elements that have come into my life over decades now, which allow me to teach from what I would call a spiritually inclusive perspective that is also very much coloured by or inspired by spiritual activism. I didn't become a teacher of this kind out of nowhere. On the contrary, in terms of my professional life, before I was a writer, I was a publisher, but I was also very much, and in my publishing also, very much a social activist. I've been a peace activist since I was 14, and I've been a social activist my whole adult and even prior adult life. That's just been my exceptional good fortune. And part of it came from the fact that I grew up in New Zealand at a time when social justice was very much centre. You know, there's lots of things I could complain about the times that I grew up and the religious bigotry, for example, that existed between Catholics and Protestants, and because that's about all there were in those days, you know, Catholics, Protestants, and some Jews. And we didn't really know much about anyone else except those who went to be missionaries to hope to convert them. I learned a lot also from those prejudices, which are constructs of the mind. And we'll be talking about the mind and how it sometimes quite gleefully makes constructs that are very unhelpful to us. But one of the great advantages of growing up in New Zealand at the time that I did was that social justice was something that we took pride in as a community. And if we didn't always live it, we nevertheless thought about it. And that was very formative for me. And then the years that I lived in Europe, which was quite a long time, 16 years, was a time of great political activity when it seemed that we could very much make significant changes in the outer world. And so we, and I say we because there were many, many people engaged, many people becoming a we, parting, becoming we, becoming they, becoming us, becoming them, all these configurations, but with a huge atmosphere of optimism. A huge atmosphere of optimism. However, that optimism was eventually somewhat tempered by the fact that even making changes in the outer world didn't always effect the changes that one wished for on the inner world. And so we began to see, and again, many people began to see quite clearly that changes on the inner world and changes with the outer world really could not be viewed as a divisible activity. You couldn't begin to make changes, positive changes, on your inner world without affecting the outer world more positively. And you couldn't, for example, be a peace activist in the outer world while being easily enraged on the inner. It made no sense, although God knows some of us tried hard enough. So those things began to be very clear during the time that I was growing into my more mature adulthood, going into through my 20s, into my 30s. And one of the other things that really began to be very clear, particularly for me, at the time from late 20s into 30s, at the time when I was the managing director of the Women's Press, and we were looking very closely at a whole redefinition of the psychological theories about what it meant to be a human being and the psychoanalytic theories of what it meant to be a human being. And women had a very big role to play in that, as do many people who are, for one reason or another, marginalised. There are fewer things that you can take for granted, and there's great advantage in that. There are disadvantages in it. I'm not romanticising it, but there can also be advantages in it, that you can really watch some of the things that go on that are called power plays and see them, in a sense, for what they are. And also see who they advantage and who they disadvantage. And ideally would want to do things differently, not just to replace the actors. That's really important. If we see that a power play, and this is again, I'm talking about the mind. If we see a power play doesn't serve some people well, then it doesn't serve any of us just to exchange the actors. Do you see that? Do you see that? That's a really, really important thing to see, particularly within the context of our spiritual maturing. If we're only talking about political gains or political maturing, we might say, well, it matters very much who has the power, and it's the having of the power that really matters. From a spiritual perspective, we would say something quite different. We would say we need to really investigate what power is and what truly empowers people, particularly so that they will take on their freedom to be part of the healing of this world and not of the harming. Do you see that? Do you see that very, very significant difference? And one of the things that was really emerging in that time and has emerged more and more strongly since in all sorts of guises and disguises and clarity and muddles and clarification and so on and so on. You know, the seasons of everything change. That's how it is. Bringing together a perspective that is made of a particular trinity, the psychological understanding of what it means to live alongside one another and not always have your needs paramount. I mean, our maturity depends upon it. Our maturity absolutely depends upon it, recognizing that sometimes our needs are not paramount. And that we no longer need to lie on the floor and kick and scream and protest. That's part of it. The other part of that, there are many parts of that, but another part of that that very much comes to my mind is the point that I made this morning in meditation, that another part of our psychological maturing is really to recognize that my happiness depends upon you, and your happiness depends to a very great extent upon me. It also depends, of course, on your attitudes and on your inner well-being, all those things. But I can, at the drop of an unkind word, shatter your happiness, at least for a few moments. Or with a smile and a kind word, I can restore your well-being. You know, we have immense power. This is what power really is. It's our power to give. It's our power to receive. It's our power to heal rather than to harm. Okay, so the psychological then moves closely towards the spiritual. Because the spiritual is not just about what the religions have been able to teach us. And some of what the religions have been able to teach us is of great value. Is of enormous value. And some of it is of enormous value because it teaches us very painfully and acutely what doesn't work in developing ourselves as more compassionate beings. We can put our hands together at our hearts and bow deeply to the people who have taught us also how not to behave. Sometimes in the name of religion, and sometimes in the name of other ideologies. Because sometimes religion is really stuck at an ideological level. And sometimes, despite itself, it bursts into the transcendent, where it belongs to no one and it belongs to everyone. Where it is so alive that it could not be contained within any one dogma, any one group, any one path. And then the third part of this trinity, the political, the spiritual, is the social. What is the impact of what we're doing? And all of the religions and all of the psychological theories really bring us to thinking very, very deeply about what we're doing. I mean, sometimes they do it in an extremely clumsy way. Sometimes it's in a very divisive way. Sometimes it is in a very judgmental and disrespectful and belittling way. Nevertheless, at the heart of all the religions and of all the great philosophies, of all the great philosophies, including the religions now, there is the phrase that is quite exquisitely summed up in Hindu teachings, which is, see yourself in others, and others in yourself, you will have nothing to fear. Because, of course, what we fear most is difference. And yet, we can learn, sometimes very slowly, even to see differences with some interest and some respect. You know, each of us has had experiences that are very, very similar to one another's experiences. You know, yesterday when you were introducing yourselves so very beautifully, and none of you spoke of your sorrows, but I knew that you come sometimes with sorrows, often with sorrows, because often we don't give ourselves the opportunity for a retreat until something, it might be a sorrow, it might be a loss, it might be a disappointment, it might be an outrage. But whatever it is, maybe the old remedies are not working. Maybe they're not quite enough. And until you come to retreat often enough to know that coming to the retreat is the answer to coming to retreat, isn't it? Coming to retreat is the answer to coming to retreat. Just as prayer is the answer to prayer. And peaceful mind is your teacher of peaceful mind. But until you get into that rhythm, until you allow that rhythm to get into you, sometimes you have to come because it is a sorrow that brings you. And all of the faiths teach us that we can understand each other's sorrows from a place of compassion. Do unto others as you would have them do to you. Love one another as I have loved you, which I believe, was unconditionally. It's a very big call, isn't it? But, you know, for all their idiocies, that's what's at the heart of all the religions. So when I teach you from a spiritually inclusive, universalist perspective, I do so because I think our differences are of real interest. But I also think that there is something in our seeking that brings us back to these primary teachings wherever they have occurred. And let me say to you, they have occurred everywhere. They have been revealed to our human family across all of the centuries. They are still being revealed to our human family. They're revealed when someone is exceptionally kind to you as you stand at the bus stop and you've just missed the last bus and somebody helps you out. You know, they're revealed to you when you're struggling with your twins in a pushchair and you can't get into the bank because the door of the bank is too narrow. What are you going to do with the pushchair? They're constantly being revealed. These teachings of our interdependence, of the core of our happiness, of the core of our well-being, of the core of our peaceful mind, come from all the traditions. And it has been my incredible privilege to become completely fascinated by religion at an early enough age that I could expose myself to these teachings and allow them to do their work in me, which is all that I can bring to you. It's all that I can bring to you, that I have been given this opportunity through my writing, through the intense work that writing demands, so that you would be halfway worthy of these topics. It's intense work. But what it calls me to pay attention to, I think, is of great value. So all that I can do is bring to you what has been brought to me. None of us own this. No religion owns it. No culture owns it. No gender owns it. No heavenly path owns it. In this, we are absolutely together. In this, we are a single human and divine. And there are teachings, there are explicit teachings in all of the faiths which really allow you to know that others have known this through all of time. Om Shanti.